You're going down, sucker.
Possibly live from Ted Jones Broadcasting Center in Trophy Club, Texas. It's the definitive quasi-independent podcast covering your once-upon-a-time world champion Dallas Mavericks. It's the Mavericks Outsider Report. I'm Rylan Rowe. I do sports. With me, as always, as we hit the post here on Cochise, it's the man at the helm, the mild-mannered reporter. You might know him as Ballin', but his mama calls him Brian. Ballin' with Brian. Mr. Brian Gutierrez of the Two-Man Game and ESPN's True Hoop Blog Network. The man's everywhere. He's here with me. We're going to be talking Mavs. And that's really all I got, dude.
So,
good show.
See ya. Bye.
All right. It's been a while. Episode 74. What is today? Tuesday, April 23rd, 2013. Yeah. The final show from V1.
The only
of the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center, V2 of the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center, will be online and operational, I don't know, in about 3 or 4 weeks.
And you're kind of a big deal this week, aren't you? You're going out of town.
Kind of a big deal, kind of going to Las Vegas.
How many times have you gone to Vegas?
Final trip of what I'm calling the farewell to baller status tour, which is what happens before you buy a house, move out of your small house and move into a big house. How many times have I been to Vegas? 2001, 2004, 8, 9, and now 13. So this will be my fifth time.
You had a two-year stretch where you went back-to-back?
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's because I'm awesome. 2008 was when I picked up and went by myself because the original seven members of the time were playing at the Flamingo. And that was an opportunity I couldn't pass up. And so then... hang on. That didn't go as planned. I was going to give us a little music to accompany my time story.
Oh.
But they like to do this stuff. Anyway, I went to the Flamingo.
This is story time music, too.
It's the original seven members of the time, included, which are Morris Day, Jerome Benton, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, Jesse Johnson, Jellybean Johnson, Monte Moore. And I got to actually go on stage and do the bird with Morris and Jerome. I got a fist bump from Jesse Johnson when it was all over. I'm very proud of myself.
Nice.
There we go.
Oh.
So it was awesome. So I went in 08, and then that was just a solo trip, so it didn't really count. So in 09, Courtney and I went, and I love to gamble, dude. I'm dangerous when it comes to gambling.
What's your game? What do you do?
Mostly blackjack. I like to say that I play poker, but I don't have the patience for playing poker in a tournament. At that. I can play home games poker. You want to get together, 5-6 guys, play poker for a few hours. I'm down with that because it's your buddies and you're clowning on each other and having a good time and doing whatever it is that you do. But the tournament setting for me, I've done it a couple times and it, I don't know.
It is.
I may try it, but I kind of have ADD when it comes to stuff like that. I like to play blackjack. I like to bet on sports, obviously. I'll probably do a little NBA playoff betting, so I'll hit y'all up on Twitter. I got a lot of betting friends on Twitter. Twitter is heavy with betting traffic on my Twitter stream, so I'll probably hit some of those people up and try to take advantage of whatever's out there, and there will be no time. However, Brian.
Yes?
I booked this trip in, January. I don't know. We booked it a long time ago. A bunch of friends going, and... unbeknownst to everybody, guess who's playing four shows in Vegas while I'm there?
Is it Prince?
Yes.
Oh.
For the first time since 2004, I get to see Prince in it's going to be in a small venue Saturday night, whatever that day is, April 26th, 27th, I don't know, whatever. So that's awesome. Basketball, dude. I think our listeners probably would prefer we talk about that. We like to talk about the
Mavs
here.
People like Prince, man.
People, they should. I think I got a little, yeah, here we go. That's just funk, dude. The chicken scratching in the background there. Anyway,
all about it.
What we got on the docket today, homie? What we doing?
We're gonna look ahead, we're gonna look behind, and we're gonna kind of We're definitely going to start with Rick. I know you're into it right now. I can see it. The guys on the stream can see it. Guys and gals on the stream can see right now that Ryland is all about Prince. I can't imagine. You might. I wonder if you might get a restraining order from Prince.
No.
On Saturday.
Not necessary, but I will have my funk face on. There's no question. Yeah, we're going to do a little retrospective and a lot of looking forward. This season has been one of...
It's over, by the way. The
turds,
season is over.
Steaming piles of poo-poo. So, retrospective, generally speaking, is not a valuable exercise, if you will, Brian. But I guess we'll spend a little time on that because there's been a few things that have happened since we last got together that warrant discussion. And we'll definitely be looking forward. So, what's first on the docket?
We're going to talk about probably one of the most interesting post-game interviews in the history of post-game interviews.
It was kind of awesome.
In regards to the Dallas Mavericks.
It was kind of awesome.
Now, Rick Carlisle is a coach that everyone in the Metroplex has to love, no matter what, basically, because he's no-nonsense, and he's delivered.
And who loved him first?
You did.
Thank you.
You did. I will swiftly and rapidly acknowledge that. But and you jumped on that stock while it was low.
I got rich on Rick Carlisle stock. What's a good stock that just shot up from nothing? I don't know. I'm not rich enough. Look around you. Oh, no, obviously, I don't know.
You have a house. I rent, by the way. So.
Hey, bro. Let me tell you right now, getting ready to move, I'm wishing I rented.
But
this
yes.
is my first move as a grown-ass man. Because when I moved into this house, I was single. I had an apartment dweller.
This was all yours?
An apartment dweller's amount of stuff. Well, hell, 90% of what you see around you wasn't here because I was single.
Wow.
It was so much easier. I think my dad came up and helped me get my washer and dryer into the back of the truck. And I think the whole move took like 4 hours. But
wow. I'm still impressed. This is a nice place. But yes, Rick Carlisle, after the game against the Memphis Grizzlies, which was a 103-97 loss, which would have given the Mavericks a chance to have a winning record for the year.
Yeah, which to me was something that as the coach probably he had circled as a goal. As a coach, I don't think you want to look back on your career and see that sub-500, especially when you're this close. And even though he wouldn't admit it, I would bet that that game meant a little more, or rather, the idea of a 42nd win meant more to Rick than he would readily admit, and he expected the players to reflect that. And
one of them did not.
He took issue with that.
One of them did not, and that was O.J. Mayo. And for the year, against his former team, the Memphis Grizzlies, in four games, he scored a total of 34 points.
Yeah, trash. Trash. And you know what? That was him against every elite team. The Grizzlies are a good team in the West. They really are. Mm-hmm. They are not your grandpa's Grizzlies. Or he or grandpa didn't have them. They're not
Vancouver's
your
Grizzlies.
Older brother's Grizzlies. And as with other teams, he just shat the bed against Memphis. But Memphis, it was more of a story because that's his former team, obviously. And Rick kind of had something to say about that, obviously.
He finished the game against Memphis with only 2 points, 1 of 6 from the field, 0 of 4 from three. 3 rebounds in about 28 minutes, which was not impressive at all. And again, Rick is kind of a guy that, giving some more background to this, he's a guy that stands up for his players. If they stink, he's going to find the positives to back it up.
And he frequently takes credit for losses. He frequently mm-hmm. takes credit for, this one's on me, guys, that type of thing. Credit's not the right word. Blame is more the right word.
He'll jump on that grenade.
He jumps on the grenade for guys, and obviously he's well-liked among players around the league, and that's one of the reasons.
He did not take that approach in the post-game interview with reporters about this Memphis game, and this is kind of a thing we've kind of liked to do more so recently is play and then pause and then analyze. So that's what we're going to do with this post-game interview with Rick Carlisle, where he basically went to task on O.J. Mayo. So here we go.
Well, they made a lot more plays than we did, and we didn't, you know, we just, we made a lot of mistakes. We had some guys that didn't show, literally, and just didn't compete for us the way that we needed them to compete. So it's really disappointing, you know, it's just really disappointing.
Rick, your frustration with O.J. was pretty apparent. Especially when you mentioned the fourth quarter, what was up with him tonight?
Before that, we should mention this as well. In the fourth quarter of that game, they were on offense, and Rick is basically like a little puppy running into traffic. He just jumps on the court. He's probably weaving around one person to call timeout, and then he's barking at OJ. And
the most aggressive call for a timeout I've seen from any coach at any level of basketball. He was well out onto the court, intercepted OJ. Basically, OJ was taking the ball down the court, and he just got right in front of him. And you could just tell that if he had his way, he would have just grabbed him by the shoulders and just taken him down.
I don't know what he did to control himself, because he clearly took the nicest route possible of benching a player, but you could tell he definitely wanted to do something not so nice to him. But let's go ahead and keep going.
I don't know. You should probably ask him, because I'm not sure. He wasn't into it in the first half. We showed him some film at halftime where he was virtually just standing around defensively. And said, "Hey, we need you. You know, try to get him going a little bit." And he just had a bad night. I guess I'll write it off to that. But I tell you what, if I was playing against my former team, I'd come out ready to go. I'd come out ready to go at him. But that's me. You know, that's me.
Do his bad nights come too frequently? I mean,
well, you know, let's. The good news is there's only an opportunity for one more. Okay?
Time out. That says everything right there. He'll get into it more later. And then again, I believe there was a subsequent game where Rick called himself a Little League dad because of the amount of time that he spent with OJ. You can hear in his voice, this is a gentleman in Rickster Carlisle who did not have the athleticism, natural talent, natural ability, even close to what OJ Mayo has. But he carved out time in this league because of other things, and obviously some of those things are what makes him a good coach, but he has invested so much time in OJ this year, and he's even known as a coach who works one-on-one with players more so than the average coach. But clearly, even above and beyond that, he's gone with it with OJ into this thing to the degree that he's willing to say things like this in the Little League thing, and he is pissed because he's thinking, here's this guy, I've put all this time into it, and it's just not going to work. And the thing is that they like OJ. They've praised OJ for the work that he put in, and they've praised OJ for the time that he spent and coachability and everything else. And then this thing just happens. And this type of performance happens against teams that are in the upper echelon of the Western Conference. And this is a guy in Rick Carlisle who is either fed up and frustrated because he thinks that there's something that OJ isn't doing or is incapable of doing, or he's just out of ideas and is frustrated because he can't do anything more. Either way, not a good outcome for the Mavs, not a good outcome for what the whole year we spent talking, trying to evaluate the OJ Mayo situation moving forward for Dallas. So, I mean, that was the gavel. Sometimes I tweet hashtag gavel. That was Rickster going hashtag gavel on OJ. There's only room for one more bad performance, and that's it. OJ's not coming back.
We're going to talk about that.
We will, but that's my gavel.
Okay, let's continue.
I just gaveled the gavel.
You did.
You know, I just want to see him show up. I want to see him show up and compete. He didn't compete tonight. And I'll tell you what, I just, you know, with all the time that we've put into, you know, helping him develop and bringing him along, for him and the biggest game of the year, an opportunity to be a winning team, you know, for him to show up like he did tonight, I was shocked. And look, sometimes guys have bad nights, so, you know, make sure you put that in there too.
Has he been one of the more frustrating players for you?
No, I've avoided the use of the word frustration. I am all about enthusiasm this year, really, and I've been very consistent with that. But you know, if you're not going to compete, don't show at all. So look, we got one left, and we got a chance to avoid a losing record, and I think that is significant. So, you know, we got to get ready for Wednesday. And, hey, we played a great game against New Orleans last night. You know, the challenge is going to be to duplicate it on Wednesday.
And you mentioned the winning record. Obviously, that's out the window now.
Okay. I think we've... That's pretty much the gist of this whole thing. So what do you think... What do you think is the deal with OJ? What is the cause of this? This is the result. I think we're all pretty clear on what the result is of this experiment. But give me some causality here, man. What happened? Like, what's the deal?
What happened was I asked him during the exit interviews if this was mental fatigue, physical fatigue, whatever. And he said it was a mix of both. Now, going into the previous two seasons where he was basically the sixth man for Memphis, he was only playing, I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but it was nowhere near the amount of minutes that he was playing.
He's never missed a game, but this was definitely a career high in minutes, but the dude's young, he's in shape, he doesn't look tired. The problems that plagued him late in the season also plagued him early in the season. He was just hitting shots at an unsustainable rate, which I think gave everybody a little bit of a sense of fool's gold. I mean, to me, this is a guy who, despite a year of probably working harder than he's ever worked off the court and from the coaching staff, really investing in a guy they wanted to see if they could develop, I just think that basketball IQ wise, there's a ceiling, and the ceiling is very low. It's a crawl space underneath a house, and that's as far as it's going to get. And we need guys with higher basketball IQ.
And that's something that we'll talk about further along the road. I think it was also having to be the guy.
And I say we, yes. Damn it,
yes.
So I'm a fan. It's we. I'm a customer, and when my ticket rep calls me, he says you're Dallas Mavericks. So, damn it, I'm saying we. Carry on.
I think it was also the responsibility of having to be the guy the first basically 2 months of the year while Dirk was out, because they needed someone to carry the load, and defensively opponents geared up for him, and he had challenges along the way, but he showed some bright spots. But
he did, and he could have learned more from that than he ultimately did. That's why I think at the end of the day, his basketball IQ has a very low ceiling.
I think there's some truth to that, and I think there's some truth to the merit of him just getting burnt out by the end of it. I think, to me, it just seemed like looking into his eyes, he looked tired.
Yeah. Well, if that's true, then, and I think you could see that, obviously, in his disposition, to use Rick's favorite term, then that's okay. That's part of the job interview. If you're not up to that job role, that's fine. You need to go be a seventh man for somebody. That's fine. Go be a seventh man. You know, you failed the job interview.
I think his role was perfect in Memphis, with not necessarily being the sixth man, but being that scoring punch that you need in a timely fashion.
But they, even with him in what you may view as his ideal, optimal role for his skill set, they didn't care to try to even keep him around. So I think that says something about his potential value, because guys like that, they need to be more efficient shooters, and it doesn't matter what you do or what you do well or better than the next guy. You got to be smart. There's too many moments of just not being smart. Look like me and my buddies out there in the Grapevine Rec League being knuckleheads.
Such a knucklehead.
So I think, I mean, to me, this was vintage Rick. This is why I love Rick. This is why Rick is the most valuable long-term asset for this franchise. We've talked about that before. I said it. Ben Rogers stole it from me via osmosis. But I said it first years and years and years ago when it was me driving Rick's bandwagon and he was back there all by himself, alone on the bandwagon.
Let me ask you this.
With me driving it.
Next year, this coming
just
season.
Just us.
This coming
driving
season.
Down the road.
This coming season, who's the more valuable asset, Rick or Dirk?
Well, Dirk. Dirk, as long as Dirk's in uniform, Dirk's more valuable. But
2 years from now.
Dirk, as long as Dirk's in uniform, Dirk's more valuable. But my point is that as long as the working relationship of the triangle of whatever you want to call it, the triumvirate, as long as Rick, Donnie, and Mark have a copacetic working relationship and they all agree on the direction they want to go and they all like working with each other, then he is the best coach available, because Phil Jackson's not unretiring. a lot of the better guys are the few better guys there are that are still active, you know, they're not coming here. They're tied up. So, you know, Pop is going to stay where he's at, you know. So it's like, Rick, man, you got that coach is so valuable. So
what if Greg Popovich said, "I will coach the Mavericks"? What would you do?
I'd make him an offer.
Even though you hate the Spurs that much.
I'd make him a generous offer. Dude, that's my caveat of life, is that I hate the Spurs, but I respect the crap out of Pop. Always have. And honestly, I hate the Spurs because they're good. I mean, that's it. And there's other reasons I hate them, but that's the root of it all. But Pop, I'd bend over backwards to get Pop in here, but
and then you'd say,
I doubt that happens. He's going to coach there and then retire.
And then you'd say, see you to Rick. That would be awkward.
That'd be hard.
That would be very hard.
His feelings would be hurt, but he'd get over it.
He would. So, yeah, I think we've covered enough ground on
the, OJ, no Moss.
Well, we'll come back to that.
OJ.
We'll come back no to Moss. That. I meant Rick on OJ.
It was funny, though. That's why I like it. I'm glad he did that.
I mean, looking
that's the kind of crap that we've had to kind of fish for during this season, is stuff to make us go, ooh, this is entertaining. Oh, this breaks up the monotony of another frustrating loss.
And so. this was what was going on in the locker room, waiting for players to come out. After Rick spoke, everyone in the media was like, oh my gosh, this was crazy.
And let it be known that OJ didn't talk to the media after that.
He did not.
He kind of hauled butt out of there, which,
he was gone as soon as we came in.
Clearly was not happy with the way he performed, or didn't want to face sort of the embarrassment, and he should have been embarrassed given the performance. But I think what you're seeing with him is a guy who simply, he can't do anymore. This is what he can do. This is who he is. I guess that's the point that I want to get across, is that this is who he is.
He's met his potential.
This is who he is.
Yes.
It was worth a shot. This is who he is.
Boom goes the dynamite.
Done.
Break or next segment? Break it.
Let's break it.
Okay. So after the break, we are going to talk about Mark Cuban. And kind
Who?
Of Mark Cuban.
Oh, I know him.
He has a lot of money, and he owns a basketball team that you like a lot.
We're going to do a quick Cubes hit, and then some good old callback to like MOR episode 0.5 with some buy, sell, or hold.
Buy, sell, or hold, Cuban, spicy ketchup.
Oh, yeah, we got to talk about that, too. Oh, my God, what a day. This is about to get good right here. I'm just going to let this groove
go.
I'm just going to let this groove for a minute. I've created a monster, cause nobody wants to see Marshall no more. They want Shady, I'm Chopped Liver. Well, if you want Shady, this is what I'll give you. A little bit of weed mixed with some hard liquor, some vodka that'll jumpstart my heart quicker than a shock when I get shocked at the hospital by the doctor. That's a great little mashup there. That's Prince with Controversy, and Eminem with Without Me, I'm sure. All you youngsters out there know that one. It's Mavericks Outsider Report, episode 74. I'm Rylan. He's Brian. We like basketball. We like sports. We like tweeting. Brian likes running. I do not.
Everybody, I ran again today.
Everybody loves Whataburger. Today is a red letter day in the history of America, Brian Gutierrez, because
spicy ketchup.
Spicy ketchup is now a permanent fixture at your local Whataburger. It will no longer be a limited time only thing. And even better, spicy ketchup, along with world famous Whataburger fancy ketchup and Whataburger original recipe mustard, will now be carried in bottled form at your local HEB.
Where's the local one, though?
We need them. Better put it in Central Market. Otherwise, there's going to be a lot of people at DFW area that are not happy with that. But it's a red letter day in American history. This is the day.
This was kind of the announcement we turned it all around. They were teasing, though, wasn't it? They had this date like in commercials or something.
Oh, did they?
I don't know. I thought they did, because I think I tweeted that to you and Dodge, that this was the next step in the Nugget Wars. That Whataburger was just going to throw their hat.
Dodge needs to pick back up on the Nugget Wars. He's kind of been silent on that for a while. But anyway, it is a great, great day for America.
I'm happy for you.
I'm going to remember this day forever. I hope you all will as well. Ketchup. I mean, dude, Whataburger ketchup in a bottle. Are you serious with this? So Let's talk about Mark Cuban. We're going to make this one kind of quick, but I think it's worth noting. On or about the time that the Mavericks were mathematically eliminated from the playoffs here a couple weeks ago, missing the playoffs for the first time since the spring of 2000. You can all remember it well. That was the Rodman year. That was the year Dirk kind of started coming into his own. Then that next summer, Dirk still played summer league and dominated, scored like 30 points in every game in summer league. Had no business being there.
It's good times.
But that's why Dirk's awesome. And then obviously since then rattled off a string of impressive consecutive playoff appearances. Mark Cuban took to the treadmill, and it was before a game.
Got to dodge those sweat pellets.
Yeah, I would be kind of in the back of that scrum.
I got to get in there.
I would advise.
My height helps.
Okay, you're just, good then. You can kind of be medium rear area and just use your height to leverage the arm angle. Mm. Plus, with recording technologies in this day and age, you know, you don't need ultimate proximity to the mouth, which is on the body of the sweaty man on the treadmill, which is bad news all the way around. Anyway, he took to the treadmill and just kind of was riffing. I got the feeling. Granted, I think I was sitting in the arena, or I might have been at home, but I feel like I was sitting in the arena. I think it was the Friday night game on the 12th of April that this was all taking place. So I would have been, I think I was, I definitely was at that game. I think that's when it was. I got the sense in reading the great tweets of Ballin' with Brian, my compadre sitting across the table from me, that Mark was just kind of riffing on, "Welp, we're out of the playoffs, and here's how it feels." You know, is that more or less what you got?
Yeah, I think he could have easily taken a route where he didn't have to answer these questions.
He could have been gruff and standoffish, and
he could have given short answers.
And I wouldn't have been surprised. I mean, I think Mark Cuban's a genius. We also know that his personality can be very up and down when it comes to getting mad about stuff. And this is something that he could have easily just been really pissed off about and said, "I'm so mad that this happened, and I'm going to take some time to gather my thoughts and don't ask me about it." And I don't think anybody would have been too terribly surprised. Maybe a little bit, but not too terribly surprised. So I thought he said some interesting stuff.
I think the big thing, I think, that everyone was glad that he said was that he basically took the blame. He jumped on the grenade for what happened this year.
He learned from his coach.
He did. I mean,
who here can't learn something from Rick Carlisle?
I know that I learned not
besides
to
OJ. Besides OJ Mayo, Darren Collison, what other knucklehead? Those are the main two. Anyway, sorry. I derailed you.
I know that I should not ask stupid questions. That's what I've learned from Rick.
For damn sure. But he does it out of love.
But he jumped on the grenade. He basically said that this was the equivalent of a business going out of business, basically. And it was a year that was a foreign feeling. It was very excruciating to see happen. And he commented later that he felt that the game in November against Charlotte, which was the overtime game where I said that was some of the worst basketball I've ever seen.
It was terrible.
That was a red flag for him saying, "Well, this probably is not going to end well."
Well, and when you mentioned that on Twitter, I texted you and said, "I bet he's talking about Charlotte." You said, "Yeah." And prior to that even, there was a show we did a couple months ago, and Mark Folliwell had called in, and before we even went on the air, we were just getting him ready, and we were talking to him and just BSing, and I think we said something about, you know, crappy memories that are going to persist from this season. And that was the first thing out of his mouth was that game. He doesn't have a mouse. First thing out of his mouth was that game in Charlotte. And, I mean, everybody, it's like this giant wart, and it happened very early, and it was a terrible indicator of things to come as it turned out. You know what I liked about that whole Cuban thing, though, Brian, in addition to the things you said, which are all interesting to hear, is that he is uncomfortable. Yeah. And as a Mavericks fan, if you're a season ticket holder, if you're a fan, if you're someone who follows the team, even casually roots for the team, if he's uncomfortable, that's a good place for him to be in for the fortunes of the team, because you know that's going to motivate him even further to get back to the place where they want to be, which is getting into the playoffs, having a chance, having a positive outlook going forward. I mean, going into this season, after the offseason occurred the way it did, this was the first season in a long time that you basically went into it with an outlook that was trending downward.
Excuse me.
You know, That was like a computer fart. So for that to happen and be such a unique event in recent Mavericks history, you know, nobody wants to experience that. And he hasn't really, you know, he's not always the best at admitting that he screwed up. And I don't think that's necessarily what he's doing here, but he could easily be doing that right now and trying to pull the pocket protector and abacus and slide rule card of, I read the CBA and all you guys are going to be proven wrong, which ultimately may well end up being the case. I still think that there's a lot of truth to that statement, more or less. But to take the more guttural, reactionary, this really effing sucks that we are not in the playoffs for the first time in forever, and we're mad about it, and I'm mad about it, and here's what I don't like, and here's what I did wrong, and I'm really uncomfortable. That gives me additional hope that I know that he's no more comfortable about it than anyone else, despite the fact that he's the owner and he makes his money or loses his money generally regardless. In fact, he's pointed out that sometimes when they've won that they've lost money or broken even, mm-hmm. you know. So for him to have that still be more or less standing in front of everybody and reaffirming that he's all about winning and the competition of it, that's a good thing. I also like that he admitted he had some regrets, although he wasn't too specific.
No.
I think we'll be able to speculate on that further down the road when more moves start to happen. But all in all, you know, very good thing to sort of, I don't know, soften the blow of not having any Mavs basketball to watch now in the end of April.
I think you brought up a good point where it's a sense of discomfort for him with the season, and he brought up the analogies of that he was dating this season. He's already broken up. It's been the date.
I felt that way. I left the date, dude. I just left her sitting at the table.
He also referenced that he's kind of been knocked down, and he's kind of a guy that's motivated to get back in the gym, kind of in that state of, okay, I've been humbled a little bit, now I gotta grind it out again. And he's not a dummy. He didn't just luck into being a billionaire. He worked his ass off to get into that state, and he's smart, and he knows what he needs to do. And he said that it's going to be a 24-hour grind for him. He's going to be waking up with laptops in his bed, looking at spreadsheets, data or whatever.
However you prefer,
and he's going to fall asleep with a laptop in his bed. And he's just going to be analyzing every single thing.
But he didn't say what website he'd be looking at that happens.
No,
probably a good thing.
That's probably smart. But he's gonna toil over it. And I know people are like, well, why are you still doing Shark Tank then if you're still doing that?
Oh, man, whatever. Yeah. I mean, look, you want to talk about Shark Tank versus the Darren Williams trip. That's a good conversation to have. But the generic sort of, that's like, oh, Tony Romo went and played golf. Oh, my God.
You can't expect him to eat, sleep, and breathe
every
it.
Every dumbass common Joe radio call-in caller, do they only wake up in the morning, go to their job, and then go home? No, so shut up. Come with something better than that. You do not pass go. You do not collect $200. Don't you damn call here again.
He basically said if a fan doesn't understand how much or how committed he is to the team, they're never going to understand.
And I'm sure he is. I've never doubted that. I mean, we can look at his decisions and try to, you know, break that down and be armchair quarterbacks or say if it was me, I would have done this or that. And nobody's saying don't do that, but I don't think anybody's ever questioned. The thing is, and you mentioned that, you know, you don't get to be a successful businessman and a billionaire and before that a millionaire and so on without being smart and working hard, and that's all true. Timing is huge in that too. And I think the concern that I've had from day one with this plan is that, you know, timing may not have worked in his favor as far as when Dirk signed his extension in the 2010 offseason. You know, versus when the CBA had expired, versus when they were able to finally get over the hump championship-wise. All those things lining up, plus when the lockout happened. All those things together have kind of conspired to create two lost seasons. And part of that also is Dirk's injury. You can add that to the list of those things. So, you know, sometimes the best laid plans don't come up with the best results, regardless. And that's why this whole thing is sports. It is what it is. That's why you play the game. So I think that it'll be regardless, you know, he will be judged based on what he did or didn't do, even if the plan made total sense. And that's why this summer, dude, is going to be an exciting summer if you're a basketball nerd and a salary cap nerd and you love the Mavs and you like breaking down all the personnel moves and everything, which we always like to do. So I'm looking forward to it. And I think, aren't we going to talk about that?
Yeah. It's going to be like it's the Skynet episode, which I've coined.
Yes, because the CBA will have become fully self-aware.
Yes, I've already started to talk.
And it's Judgment Day for the Mavs. I think that's how the Terminator thing all started.
I've started to talk. I've sent out the bat signal to the valuable people.
The Brain Trust.
The Brain Trust that will provide this think tank for the Judgment Day episode later this summer. I think we're going to say it's probably the last week of June, which is a good time.
Like between the draft and the free agency? That'd be a cool time to do it.
We'll have more information at that point. And obviously, if you haven't listened to this show, the key people are...
Watch your tweeters.
Are that too. The key people involved in this Brain Trust or think tank would be Falwell, Skin, and Stein.
My dad. the guy that mows the apartments at the yard at Brian's apartments.
I rent, dude.
But there's a guy that does the yard though. Yeah. Not the yard. What would be the right word for that? Groundskeeper.
Yeah.
There's a girl that mans the Whataburger drive through over here, and
she's got a new spicy ketchup button on.
We'll probably try and get her. My next door neighbor, she's a nice old lady. Then you know, we'll get all them together and talk maps.
I've already talked to Stein about it, and he's interested, but it's a timing issue. So we'll have to lock that in.
What's he got? Soccer or something going on?
Well, he's gonna decompress after the playoffs are over.
Well, rightfully
and then
so.
Load up again.
Oh, so that's probably hit like right in his vacation wheelhouse, yes. Actually.
But we've already talked and we'll figure something out. Skin's already down. Falwell's gonna be down. So yes. Another interesting thing about Cuban's interview was that, and I know you and friend of the show, Kenny Bybee, commented
the great to me, Kenny Bybee.
Yes.
Sports spectacular brain extraordinaire.
One of the things y'all commented.
Assistant sports information director at Stephen F. Austin University.
Go whatever SFA is.
I'm not even sure what
I
they
don't
are.
Know.
Sorry.
Which
Sorry, Kenny, if
I'm
you
guessing.
Subscribe.
One of the things y'all commented about from a tweet from Cuban was that he is not interested in doing one-year deals anymore.
That to me is the greatest realization. I'm so glad.
The exact quote, "I don't see us signing just one-year deals anymore. I think we want to grab onto some people to be part of a longer-term solution and see what happens."
I think they, as a brain trust, misjudged the psychological effect of being on a one-year deal. Should it matter? No. Should it be viewed as an opportunity? Yes. But the problem is not, sure, you know what, if you had like a Dirk and for whatever reason had the opportunity to sign someone with the mental makeup of Dirk to a one-year deal, you can bet that he's going to take advantage of that opportunity and parlay it into something. But the problem is you're receiving people who are not eligible is the wrong word, but the market is serving them one-year deals for a reason. The market's already established on most of these guys. You have to be really, really lucky and really, really perfect timing to find a diamond in the rough that has somebody that is ready for a one-year deal and yet has that makeup in the NBA because the rosters are short, the contracts are fully guaranteed. Other sports have different circumstances. That just, to me, prevents you from getting the best possible player. It's just the way it is. The NBA is its own beast, and that's kind of how the contracts go. Very few guys end up on one-year deals, and the ones that do, they got into that position for a reason, and you have to listen to what the market is telling you for that reason. And obviously, despite looking up and down on paper, I mean, on paper coming into this year, we were optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, Dirk getting hurt has more to do with that than anything else, but we were optimistic on paper. And then at the end of the day, exit interviews, you have someone like Elton Brand, a super smart veteran from way back, basically saying he thinks that affects some guys. He probably wasn't even referring to himself because he was an amnesty. He knew what was coming, but he's probably thinking about the other guys who are either one-year deals or expiring or whatever. And it's totally true. I'm glad to see they've turned over a leaf on that.
And then It's. I think it's within reason, though. I mean, you're not just gonna. You're not gonna go the Detroit Piston route in 2009.
But they've given up the idea of we're gonna try to have cap space every summer and no commitments. I think that this summer was the last of that for them with Dirk in the mix.
I think
they may want to do it again if they have, you know, someone on the radar that they're particularly interested in.
I think in retrospect it makes a whole lot of sense now that it necessarily didn't work. I mean, you could have said it could have worked because this team, if Dirk was healthy, they would have had a more realistic shot of being in the playoffs.
Yeah, but their ceiling still
would
have been not where you want to be.
No, I agree
to utilize the remainder of Dirk's effective career.
I agree with that, but I think in retrospect you kind of see that pinning your hopes on all of these one-year deals forces you to hit home runs all the time with these guys.
Right. You can't just get by with making things work. You have to get lucky and then get lucky again and then get lucky again, and you're hoping that the cumulative multiplication of all that luck catapults you into something great. And, you know, maybe the lockout season, that was definitely maybe a worthy cause. But at this point, you're wasting Dirk years, and you want to stop. So I'm glad that that's behind us now.
I agree. So I think that's going to be kind of interesting to see how that plays out with free agency for the Mavs, that they have to the free agents that they have to deal with on their own, and then the free agents that they have to ponder from the outside. Are these guys going to be fits, or can we make them fits, or are we going to have our own fits based off of how free agency goes? It's all about fit.
Will they give the coach fits, or will they fit with the coach? So yes. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we're going to make a call back to the earliest days of the Mavericks outside report with a little buy, sell, or hold.
Our ears will survive.
Talking about those fits and if they'll fit or not. But first, a break, because, I don't know, for some reason when people do this, they take breaks.
That's fine.
So that's what we're going to do.
Break. Spicy ketchup.
That's Uncle Joe. That's a quick break. Vote for Joe Walsh. Free gas for everyone. Google it. I'm Rylan. He's Brian. It's the Mavericks Outsider Report, episode 74. About to get ready to move on into the second hour, and that's when things usually get crazy.
They get
here.
Spicy.
What
can
are
I
we
say
doing?
This sucks, by the way?
Oh, yeah. We need
I know this is terrible.
I've already shaved and lapped you.
This looks bad, by the way.
Just let it go, man.
I just decided that I've got a lot of free time on my hands now with not having to cover the Mavericks, and I don't really have to care about public appearance. Yeah. I don't have to care about public appearance as much.
Which you have taken on such a business-like mode of dress in executing your Maverick responsibilities.
Yes.
I'm so impressed.
I'm going to get a skinny tie this offseason.
They would
too.
Be nonplussed with me, dude, if I was involved in that scene. They would be, I mean, like, who is this guy rolling in here?
And Doc Martens.
In his cargo shorts and flip-flops every day.
Would you wear a long-sleeve t-shirt with
cold.
Your cargo shorts?
Never.
That's a shame.
You and Jared Thigpen are wrong on that, sons.
No.
Sons. Yeah, so you've decided to let the facial hair grow, which is an interesting experiment.
It's
you ever let
terrible,
it grow before?
No.
You're definitely going to get you a good stash going. I can
already
tell. And
the stash is going to
be
terrible.
That's awesome.
It's
like
be
your
terrible.
Dad ever had, wear like a
oh,
stash
he's
or goatee?
He's got a stash.
Just a stash? So then you're set, dude. Your stash is
I'm not. If,
is
it's, if
guaranteed.
It's just a stash, I'm abandoning ship. So it's gotta have to happen all the way around. And like I've openly pleaded on Twitter, I wish there was a Rogaine for facial hair. Because I'm expecting a very dark time for the next 2 to 3 weeks to where nothing is going to happen. And it's going to be sad.
And then
and
you'll
be
able to get back in the swing. Well, yeah. You know, I've been growing a beard off and on since the fall.
Since you went out of the womb.
The fall of 2011, like really growing a beard. Courtney claims I've always, but that's not growing a beard. That's shaving and waiting a week and shaving and waiting a week. But I've been really growing a beard. And I realized that ever since I started doing that was when all of Dallas sports started going into the shitter.
Mm-hmm.
So I got kind of tired of the beard a few days ago and shaved it. And so we're going to go sans beard for a while. Just going to go back to the periodic stubble beard like I used to do for my previous years in adulthood. And we'll see what happens. If the Rangers continue to play well and then the Mavericks do well in the free agency and or the draft, then that's
the verdict. And then the Cowboys?
They're not in the conversation.
Oh, okay.
Then that's the verdict, and I can't ever grow a beard again because it does affect things.
It does?
Yes.
It's cosmic.
You know what we do does affect sports.
It does.
Yeah, don't talk about perfect games, things of that nature. It all really matters, you know. Nolan Ryan would have never gotten his 300th win if my dad hadn't gone to bed. It's written in stone. Buy, sell, or hold, man. We're going to talk about we're going to run through some quick hits of some personnel, even though we're really going to get deep into it probably this summer.
Yes, but this is a good appetizer.
It's a good appetizer. It's kind of, we're wrapping up, end of the season. It's time to think about what we've just seen and try to unsee some of it. So, by all means, let's do it.
Oh.
Where's your intro?
My bad. I hit the wrong. It's because of my computer.
I'm going to tell a story about this intro while you find it. Are you ready?
I got it.
Okay,
yeah.
Go. So we're on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. So back in the day when we were first getting started with this and we're even more amateur than we are now.
Shocking.
We were going to do a little buy, sell, or hold segment, and Brian had that sound all queued up and ready to go, and he pressed play, and like every eardrum in our head and every headphone speaker and everything just blew out and redlined, and it sounded like an old Sonic drive-through getting screamed into.
My ears are never the same.
So now every time we play that, which we've probably only played it, what, like four or five times
more than
since
that.
Then, it's like always very sort of, okay, how's this going to sound? All right, let's fade it in slow. So who are we going at first,
man? We're going to start with the incumbent free agents, and there's a lot of them go over.
There's like nine of them, right?
There's a million of them. Let's start with Elton Brand. Let's just start with him.
Sell.
Really? You don't want him back?
No.
I'm surprised.
I think he did I like him. I think he did what he was asked, but I think what this year proved with him is that he has gone beyond that threshold. Threshold being...
Game is passing by?
Yeah. I wouldn't cry if he's brought back under the right circumstances, but he doesn't seem to
be
a fan.
Okay. Elton Brand at $2 million. Which is roughly what he made this year.
You think that's a possibility, though?
I think so. I mean, he's made his money.
I'm buying him at $2 million, but I'm not buying him for more than, you know, spot duty, backup four duty. I'm not buying him at the five, except in a pinch and very matchup driven.
I would still buy because I think he had to do more than what is asked of him to do.
He did.
Especially defensively. He is known as play in the paint defense, good team defender, but the problem was the team defense was terrible.
And, you know, he might look better if he doesn't have utter sieves out in front of
exactly.
him on the perimeter.
That's my point.
I guess what fuels my thinking is what I said earlier about having crossed the threshold. Obviously, his minutes, you know, you saw Rick giving him selective days off when he knew that a future matchup would dictate that they would need him. This team needs athleticism and length. And he's got length, but he doesn't have height. Mm-hmm. He's got serious elite length, at least. But they need more athleticism, youth. That defensive center is so important with Dirk. And unless you want him playing mop-up four behind where Marion's going to play, if Marion's still on the team, there's not much for him to do. So if he wants to come be the 11th man for $2 million, then I'm buying, but I'm not buying that's what the market's going to offer him.
I think it will. It just depends on what teams.
Thus, I'm selling.
I think you're looking at...
I don't hold. I don't sit on fences ever.
We'll just do buy or sell.
Well, no. Remember I used to always sit on the fence about playoff predictions?
Yes, you did. And I said, no, we're just predicting this ball's out. I think that's his market, though. It's $2 million, and
maybe.
It's just like teams. Like he's going to be ring hunting at this point.
You might be right.
So the only point of staying in Dallas
if he's ring hunting, then he's got no business being here.
It's either ring hunting or being loyal to the situation in Dallas. He wants to see this out. He likes what's going on with Dirk. He likes Cuban. He likes Carlisle. He likes that. So if he's not ring hunting, I think that's Dallas's best chance. Next, Chris Kamen. Buy, sell, or
sell.
I would sell too.
Cement shoes, sell next.
Brandon Wright.
I'm buying.
Okay, the premise is roughly what Jan made and what Brandon Bass made. So it's roughly 4 for 17-ish.
I don't think in terms of I would disqualify Jan from that discussion because Jan has a true NBA center body, which skews the marketplace for you immediately, regardless of your resume, your skill set, anything. It just immediately skews the market. He got paid for way more than what he's ever done because of his physical presence.
And the jump shot he hit in game 6,
great
third
jump
quarter.
Shot. Love you forever for that. And for your...
Let's go!
Of course.
I missed that. But I think Brandon Bass is an interesting comp because Brandon Bass is a guy who sort of is a man without a position. Brandon Wright's kind of a man without a position in a different sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
He's not big enough to be a traditional four. He can't shoot to be a stretch four. He doesn't have the girth to be a five, but he's got a lot of things that he does well. Touch around the basket. He can kind of do a little weak side shot blocking. He's obviously very athletic. They're both young. They're both contributors that can score the ball. And they both kind of have, I feel like they're optimal effectiveness really dictated by matchups,
mm-hmm.
especially Wright, I think, more so than Bass. But I kind of see Bass in there, too, because he's such a classic tweener. You know, it's power forward skill set with small forward size, you know. And those guys are kind of screwed in today's league with the way the
right.
four, with the way the fours play nowadays.
You got to stretch that four.
Yeah, so both of them, to me, slot the same way. Now, we all laughed and said Otis Smith overpaid Brandon Bass, though.
Yeah.
So, to me... It's what would Brandon Bass get that we were happy with, you know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, whenever that was. That's kind of, I think, what you want to be, you know, throwing it right. I don't know what his market's going to be. It's so hard to dictate. Does somebody think that they can make more out of him than what he is? I think you got to approach it as the player that is the matchup player.
I think a stat-driven nerd front office is going to love Brandon Wright because he's just a PER monster, and like you said, he's a niche player.
He does things a lot of guys don't do well. Mm-hmm. Granted, he fails to do a lot of important things all too
like
well.
Like rebound.
He got a little better there at
he
the end of the
get...
year. But I'll tell you this. I want him on this team because of those things. Athleticism and length,
mm-hmm.
combo yeah. together.
Young.
You don't have a lot of that. Youth and that ability to get easy baskets. We need guys that can get easy baskets 10 feet and in, and he's shown that he's as good at that as anybody on the roster right now.
I said Brandon Wright and Sean Marion are the slippery brothers on offense. They
yeah.
are just so crafty at getting buckets
yep.
on offense. They slide into the lanes, they figure out, and they don't have to have a single play called for them, and they find a way to get a bucket. So I agree that they need to find a way to bring Wright back. I mean, as your first or your second big off the bench, he can provide you a lot of good things. Now, if you're asking him to do more than 24, 25 minutes worth of work, that's probably going to be a problem.
Yeah, you don't want to expose him. And I think it depends on the market for him is going to depend on who realizes that or who's too stubborn to think that they can change it. But in terms of fit for the Mavericks, assuming, I guess for each of these, you're assuming the price is right. I'm
mm-hmm.
buying.
Right.
I'm buying. I want him on the team.
Roddy Bubois.
Sell.
I agree.
Divest. Liquidate.
He either needs to go back to France.
Chapter 11.
He needs to go back to France, or he needs to just
go home.
Go somewhere.
Just go home.
It's run its course in Dallas.
Get by.
Not that other by, though.
It's tough.
It is.
All right, next.
Darren Collison.
Sell.
Even at what he...
Sell.
$3.3 million.
Sell.
You're done, even as a backup point guard.
Be interested to see what you think about this. I do think he may have a spot in this league as a backup, a change of pace guard.
Clearly, he does not want that, though.
Well, no, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Who would? You know, do you necessarily want somebody who wants that when they're that age?
True.
You know, you want them to at least be able to puff their chest out a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, if they're 29 and they've been at this for 7, 8 years, then, you know, maybe that's a different story. Here's the deal. Dirk, everything is about Dirk. I can't say it enough. Everything is about Dirk. and it's about how players play with Dirk. He does not understand offensive spacing. He doesn't understand entry passes. He doesn't have any of the skill set on offense that makes you even want to even watch him play with Dirk. And he doesn't make that up on the defensive end. If he was, hell, I don't know. If he was Gary Payton on the defensive end, then you'd tolerate what he does on the offensive
end. He's Roddy Bubois on defense.
But he's nothing. I mean, he has his games where he gets hot and can score 20-plus points, but he doesn't work with Dirk. Dirk's frustration level to me was at an all-time high this year. You know, it's so hard for them to get him the ball in a place where he can be effective and space the floor properly, and Collison was the number one culprit at that. It's, to me, it's your pick. If you're going to have Dirk on this team, you can't have Darren Collison. And, welp, we're going to have Dirk. So that's it. Sorry, bud. I do think he's got a chance to be a good change of pace guard.
That's ultimately what he needs
when
to be.
When he gets up ahead of steam, squares his shoulders, and doesn't think. See, it's another guy that his mind gets in the way. You got to have smart players to play with Dirk. Dirk has changed the game of basketball in the NBA. He has changed it offensively. And the collective basketball DNA and collective basketball consciousness of every little kid hasn't spent their whole life watching post-Dirk basketball. You know, maybe in 20 years, players like Dirk, everybody will be used to playing with players like Dirk and will have watched it on TV since they were 4 years old. But for now, these are all our contemporaries. These are guys who are in their 20s and 30s. They grew up on the same NBA that we did and Dirk did. This is new to everybody. It's not in your DNA. You got to have skill. You can't just get by. You got to know how to play with Dirk. You got to be smart. You got to have a good basketball IQ. You can't just get by on instinct, I guess. I guess the instinct of playing with a player like Dirk is not baked in to the collective basketball consciousness yet. So you got to have smart people. And I think that was one of the things that Cuban said that night when he was giving Cuban confessionals or whatever
that's a
we're
good
going to call it.
Should have thought of that earlier.
Damn it. Great ex post facto segment title there. But he said something about we want guys that are smarter and have a higher basketball IQ. Darren Collison doesn't fit the bill, period. Neither does Mayo, but we talked about him. But, you know, I'm done.
I agree on selling on Darren Collison. It just seems like he's completely confused. To say what you said, but
lost.
In one sentence, he's lost on offense.
Yes, perfect.
He does not know what he needs to do. And he ultimately could have been, and I said this going into the year, he needed to be J.J. Barea against Oklahoma City in L.A. in 2011. He needed to know what to do in the pick and roll off of Dirk.
And look how well J.J. played off of Dirk, because J.J. had to learn that stuff. And it took him several years, but he figured it out.
And it just didn't work for him, and I thought he would be better defensively than what he showed he ultimately was.
He's terrible.
It just wasn't a fit at all.
I'd take Barea.
I would too.
I'd take 5'8", fake charge drawing Barea over Collison defensively. I'll tell you what. You want to talk about the wear and tear of and the frustration level and the mental anguish that a player like Dirk goes through playing with guys that are that dumb from a basketball IQ standpoint. It really makes that J.J. Barea contract not look so bad that he got from Minnesota.
Yes, I agree.
Given what your guard situation has been this year and last year, even though you had Kidd, but you know Kidd was running to the ground by the schedule, given all that, J.J. Barea alone on this team this year probably nets you 5 wins.
That's
just because of the utter stupidity in the guard play and all the close games that this team lost.
So then let me ask you,
J.J. Barea, a marginal NBA player, who was lucky to even get in the league, is a 5-win player on this team this year.
I'm
going out on a limb, and that limb is this big, dude.
I
made a, for radio or audio only listeners, I made a very large limb with my hands.
That's why I try to trick Tim McMahon with one of the Bloom and Doom posts we had on the 2-man game. I asked who would have had the bigger influence on this year's team, Tyson Chandler or J.J. Barea.
Huh, well, and they both would have.
Both would have, but I made the argument that it was Barea because he defensively you were going to be screwed either way. And Tyson,
because your perimeter was
yes,
so bad.
Your perimeter was so bad. Tyson can only fix so much. So if you're going to fix one thing, you're going to fix the offense. And J.J. clearly knew what to do on offense. He knew how to feed Dirk the ball.
There's some logic to that.
And for the money, it makes, like you said, it makes sense. So
that's one of the moves that I think they'll end up, you know, looking back and saying that would have been an okay move to make. Give, if they don't, if they end up with all this without using cap space to sign a guy that makes $18 million, you know, which looks like that won't happen. Who else we got?
Anthony Morrow, buy, sell, or hold. He's a tough one to answer.
I'd buy him if it's a vet minimum.
Okay. I would buy him too, because he actually showed me more on offense than I thought could happen. He played off the dribble. He wasn't afraid to go towards the rim.
The reason I buy him at a vet minimum is because the people, or even like a $1.5 million, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. The reason is that the people that are generally available at that level, he's got as much of a resume as any of them who are coming in as, this is my shooter. You might get, you know, who's coming in at that level? You know, shooters, you know, spot shooter type guys that are old or veteran. He's young, you know, young guys that have that level of shooting ability. You might get some like really crusty third string centers coming in at that price.
Mm-hmm.
You might get, I don't know, like a Deshaun Stevenson end of the career, you know, junk up the game kind of guy maybe at that price.
A Mike James
at that price, you know, things like that. Well, not even a Mike James, but a Mike James 4 years ago, mm-hmm, at that price. So, yeah, everybody wants shooters, and he's a great shooter. We know that much.
So I would buy.
And he's young.
He is very young. I would buy on him. So it goes back to Mayo. You've already said that you're sold.
Sell, dude. I'm out.
The only way I'm going to buy, which kind of carries.
Hey, I'm out.
The only way that I would buy that carries over into the next segment is they have to get a point guard. They have to get a point guard that takes the ball handling responsibilities away from him to where he just does what he does best. And Travis Wimberly on the two-man game wrote about this, where his best asset is a shooter. He can shoot the ball. We've seen that over his career. So if you take the decision-making out and you just spot up and shoot, you're perfect in that role. So if you get a point guard that can distribute the ball and take care of things on offense – where all he has to do is just focus on getting into spots just to shoot, then it makes sense to buy OJ Mayo.
You have to get a two guard as well, because he can't be your starter.
I could see that.
You have to get a two guard.
And
you have to trust that Vince Carter can turn in another season like this one as your sixth man.
So you would not do that by flipping. You would not flip Vince as a starter.
You mean make Vince the starter at two?
Mm-hmm.
No, they've been playing. Think about it. Ever since he came here, he's played almost exclusively small forward. I assume that part of the reasoning behind that is age and chasing other twos.
Right.
They do
like him, though, as posting up.
Yeah, but, you know, that seems kind of –
It's lost now.
And I'm worried about overexposing Vince. I mean, I love what he gave this year. But to me, that's three things you have to do, because to me, it's a gamble to count on Vince to do again what he did this year, next year, which is playing minutes at the three as your sixth man and doing what he did. To me, that's a pretty hefty gamble just because of his age and no other reason. That's life. That's just the game we're playing. Now, to increase his role, boy, that's playing with fire.
It is.
That's playing with fire. So for that scenario to work where Mayo's a spot-up shooter, we've established he needs to come off the bench. So you got to get a point guard, bus driver, defensive point guard. You got to get a two guard. The two guard has to play defense. Doesn't have to be a big scorer, but you'd be nice, but really needs to play defense. And you got to hope that Vince keeps doing what he's doing. And then OJ is your co-six man with Vince or whatever, you know.
Half-six man.
Yeah, six and a half man.
Half man, half-six man. Okay, we're going to go ahead and keep it going.
Keep it going, keep it going, keep it going full steam.
Keeping it going. Well, now we're going to look at the potential free agents that could come on board.
This is where it gets interesting, and we honestly, you know, we can only just make a wild-ass guess as to who's even feasible, and I promise you there's somebody on this list that in July or August or September we're going to look back and go, we were stupid for bringing him up, and there's going to be somebody else in July, August, or September, and we're going to say, why didn't we bring him up? He wasn't on the radar. Nonetheless, here we go.
This is my full-on radar, though, from position to position. Now, keep in mind, cap space-wise, they're going to have around 16 to low-end $18 million to work with, cap space-wise.
And that's if
renounce OJ's clearly not coming back.
That's OJ's exercising his option, and you renounce.
Marion is still on board.
Right.
You renounce Brandon Wright. You renounce Collison. You renounce Roddy B.
Woo!
You keep Jay, and you keep Bernard. Keep Jared.
And Cunningham's obviously
you get the 13th pick. That's all into account. You have $16, $18 million.
Excel spreadsheet.
Start point
guard. Activate.
Start point guards. This is the list. The only two guys that are restricted, Jeff Teague out of Atlanta and Brandon Jennings out of Milwaukee.
What do you think about Jeff Teague? Just quick, what's your letter grade on him?
He's a savvy defender. I like him as a defender. I think he'd be a nice fit.
You like him as a bus driver?
That I'm not sure about. I know he can be a bus driver, but I don't think he can be a consistent one.
See,
and he's young.
That's the thing. To me, I need a sure bet in that position mm-hmm. because of what's happened this year and what we saw last year with Kidd. Kidd was such a shell of himself because of the frequency of the games. It just underscored how important point guard play is. I mean, that's why they traded Devin Harris for Kidd in the first place. You know, mm-hmm. we went into that whole thing knowing and saying this thing, being consistent with this principle, and then abandon it for this year. So I want to unabandon that principle. There are no sure bets, but I want a good bet.
Well, there is a sure one, but it doesn't make sense for him, for Chris Paul.
That would be awesome. Go ahead and rank that as my number one choice. Can you do that? Write that down for
yeah.
me?
Yes, I have that. Number one.
Ryland's number one choice, Chris space Paul, capital C, capital P.
You're out on Brandon Jennings then too.
Yeah. I don't need that style of player here.
Okay. Next.
He's not going to defend. He's a combo. He's a volume shooter. He's a low percentage shooter.
He's a very low percentage
I'm intrigued
shooter.
By the fact that he's young, but no.
This is in no particular order. The next name is Nate Robinson. Probably not as your starting point guard, but as a backup point guard.
Oh, it wouldn't break my heart as a backup, but I'm sure there's, I don't know.
He's coming off a men deal where he had to qualify to get the remainder of his deal in Chicago.
Yeah.
It seems like he's had to, after his initial contracts, he's had to go from men deal to men deal.
Yep.
So you don't, he can't break the bank. You would imagine that he can't break the bank.
I mean, to me, there's a pool of guys that could be backups, and I have no problem with him being in that pool. I kind of like his swagger. I like the way he carries himself, and he can dunk over Dwight Howard.
He can.
Sort of.
With a little
push.
Yeah.
A little shoulder push.
I would agree, as a backup, he makes a lot of sense. It's a matter of a fit money-wise. Now, one of the names that's probably going to be talked about a whole lot is Jarrett Jack. I am going to go ahead and buy on Jarrett Jack as a starting point guard for this team, even though he fits more as a combo guard and kind of in the sense of a Jason Kidd, to where he's better geared towards defending bigger guards, not traditional point guards anymore. I think he's a fit to where he's a seasoned guy. He's been around the block. He's going to know how to he's going to be a bus driver. He's not the best bus driver in the world, though, but he is a proven one, and he's got swagger to him. He's not afraid to take those shots at the end. He's built himself into a very credible guy in the NBA.
I kind of like him because he's the type of guy that you can trust to hand the offense over to in a critical situation. He's not a stupid player. Like you said, he's proven himself. He's not a, you know, eye-catching name. He's limited in some ways. You hit on all of them with me. I think I fall right in line with you. I would almost rather, like, I like Jarrett Jack as a player, but I would almost, my Mavs fan hoping against hope tells me find a way to bring in a better point guard so that your backup, you can't afford somebody as good as Jarrett Jack to be your backup, and you end up with a Nate Robinson type as your backup because you found a way to land someone that was, you know, a little bit, it was in a higher tier than Jarrett Jack. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like, for the Mavericks to optimize what they can do next year, I need someone a little, I'd like to have someone a little better than him, you know? But mm-hmm. if they don't have that and the strengths of the team have to go elsewhere, I think he's not necessarily a bad use of resources.
Another name who's a proven... Okay, now this is where you get weird. Where he's a proven bus driver, can do it. He's done it for a long time, but he's old. And that's Chauncey Billups. Can he be your bus driver for a stopgap of 1, maybe 2 years?
Depends who else you get. You surround him with the right people, it's possible.
Because I don't... He can't command a lot of money anymore because he missed almost a year and a half based off of his Achilles injury.
Right.
So he's tainted goods, but he's a proven veteran guy. And he loves Rick Carlisle.
If you find a way... Well, he's a Rick guy.
Yeah.
If you find a way to... If you make a headline-grabbing trade, he's your backup point guard. Period.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great move for the team. He fits with the coach. He's a veteran. He probably can still handle that level of workload. He can't be your starter, I don't think. But he could be very effective if you've got something marquee happening somewhere else. If you don't and you're going with the Denver Nuggets power in numbers, then if he's willing to come on a 1 year deal on a minimum deal, but if he's coming on a minimum deal, he's probably going to do it with a championship contender. So he's not going to be looking here.
Now, the name that we brought up a long time ago was Jose Calderon. Why would you want to try to trade for him now when he's making $10 million, when he's going to hit the free agency market and hit nowhere near $10 million?
Oh, yeah. He's not even going to touch that.
He's a proven point guard. He can definitely drive the bus. He can shoot. He's got Jason Kidd in him where he's allergic to getting into the paint. And he's not that great of a defender. So that's where the trade-off is. But he will drive that bus.
He's a fit if you find a defensive two guard and a defensive center. But those are going to be two of the toughest things to find. And then you need that two guard to be scoring some too. So that's the tough thing about this offseason is that there are a lot of holes to fill.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of holes to fill. I wouldn't be opposed to it just because he's a veteran and he's smart.
What if I say $6 million?
Maybe. I'm on the fence. Mm-hmm. I'm on the fence with him on that. I'm definitely on the fence there.
I think he's taking Chris Paul out of the mix. He's easily the best bus driver.
Yeah.
Point guard position
wise. Yeah, I would agree with that.
That's probably going to be about it for point guards. One name to keep in mind, Beno Udra, because they were clearly interested in him at the trade deadline.
He'd be all right.
Next, shooting guards. An interesting name that I have thought of based off of what you said, of what they need, Tony Allen.
Defensive. I would love Tony Allen. I need some crazy on this team.
You do?
I would love nothing more than to have Tony Allen on this team.
You clearly can't have O.J. Mayo then on the team anymore.
That's fine, too.
They can.
That, no poker games, card games, whatever the hell they were playing. That's all fine.
He's gritty.
I'll take him. I don't care. I don't care what I don't care if he's not going to score a lot, whatever. I'll take him. That's the kind of player. I guarantee you Rick loves Tony
he
Allen.
Would.
I bet Rick is like doodling pictures of Tony Allen in his notebook right now. Read me a list. Let's go. Just hit the list and then
Kyle Korver.
Hit the high points.
Shooter.
Supporting act only. You know what I'm saying? Like I need more than it all depends on like what other pieces you get. I don't mind him as a shooter, but if I can get Anthony Moore for cheap, I don't need him.
Making Monte Ellis as your primary big fish acquisition, Monte Ellis.
Maybe. I can be talked into that. Because
really?
Because he's got a little bit of jet in him, but boy, his shooting percentages are terrible.
Terrible.
So I put him as better than Brandon Jennings, but with all the same problems as Brandon Jennings, just not quite as severe.
I tweeted,
plus, he's glass.
That's true. And keep him away from a moped. 2 years, or I tweeted this out a couple nights ago. Out of all the players who have shot at least 1,200 field goals attempted, Brandon Jennings and Monte Ellis are in the bottom three.
Yeah.
Percentage-wise.
Yeah.
So you got to worry about that. J.R. Smith, we talked about that.
I'll take him.
I like him.
Give me some crazy. Give me crazy, man. Let's do this. Let's saddle up and ride. Dirk and the Crazy Boys. J.R. Smith, Tony Allen, Dirk.
And Vince is the sheriff.
And just Vince trying is to the keep, sheriff. Just trying to keep everybody in line.
We
got the sergeant on the team, man.
That's
He'll
true.
Keep everybody in line.
This is a name Tim McMahon just brought up. If you had to decide between O.J. Mayo and J.J. Redick.
Neither.
You're going to pass.
J.J.'s going to get paid more than he's worth.
Tyreek Evans.
boy, man,
he's
going to
be restricted.
You tell me, what is the deal with him? I feel like he fell off.
I think he just went ball so hard university his rookie year, and then he just fell off. I think he had some injuries come up along the way, but then
is
also being mired.
Is this a Sacramento Keith Sweat thing?
Could be kind of a Sacramento Keith Sweat thing, but I think he just came into the league so hot that kind of falling off has kind of hurt him even more. Because he is incredible as
a
rookie.
I'd like him as a two. I'd like him as a two.
Because he can play both. He can do a little bit of both.
I'd like J.R. Smith better, though, and I'd like Tony Allen better. I'm. Can you tell where I'm headed with this?
Yes.
I want some crazy.
You want some. Okay, so if you had to decide.
Some swag.
Money being equal value for the respective guy, Tony Allen or J.R. Smith?
J.R.
Really?
Yeah, because this team needs somebody to score. Like I said, I'm afraid to bet too hard on Vince. I don't want to put too much too soon on Vince, because if Vince can pace himself, he can be really valuable if this team comes together and does look like they can be playoff bound next year. I want Vince at full strength for him, you know, for his age. J.R. can score the ball.
I think I would go with Tony Allen because
let me tell you, there's no wrong answer there.
Right.
That's it, dude. I'm in on those two. Either one.
Small forward, it's a very niche list because you expect Sean Marion to be back.
I think he will be back. Do you think he'll be back?
I think he will.
Barring a blockbuster, yes, where he is the main, well, blockbuster is the wrong word, barring a major acquisition where he's the main piece going out,
yes,
and whoever's coming back in is good enough a player
that you can fix
some of the holes that Sean leaves, he will be here. And he comes to play every night. The Brain Trust loves him.
So if you take off Andre Iguodala, who's the main primary small forward who's available.
I'd love to pick him up. I wanted them to trade Cron Butler for him 3 years ago, yeah, if you remember that.
Yeah.
But I think he'll stay put, probably.
But if he's off the list, your two names for small forward are Chase Budinger and Corey Brewer.
I'd take Brewer back.
I think everyone would take him back.
I mean, it was a bad idea to let him go. The contract that they had with him was very reasonable. The same time they decided to trade him for nothing, they exercised an option on Dominique Jones that in the long run cost them over 30% of what Corey Brewer would have cost them over the same time. So if they don't exercise that team option on Dominique Jones, then they're already a third of the way there to offsetting the Brewer cost. It was very short-sighted, very bad move. Everybody has him. You know, John Daniels traded Adrian Gonzalez. You know, everybody does stupid things. That's Donnie's. Sorry, bro. That's the truth. But Brewer is not a heel-all. He's a nice bench player, but he brings things that I love.
He can drop 20 on a given night if he needs to.
He can, but he's energy. He's active hands. You know, I love active hands. Mm-hmm. Back when we had a good basketball team and we used to talk about things that happen in the games and not just things that happen in the offseason, I used to always talk about active hands. Right. That's Corey Brewer to a T.
And I think there's an actual situation where he doesn't stay in Denver because they have so much depth on their team and there's money that
needs
to be spread.
They have to make some choices over there.
Yeah, they have some tough decisions
to
make.
Somebody's going to shake out of that and be a serviceable player available to some other team, and the Mavericks have a little money to spend. So I would keep an eye on everything that happens over there.
Power forward, you're just looking at backups at this point, and we've already decided we'd want Brandon Wright to be still in the mix. If he happens to not be in the mix, I would think the name of interest is Carl Landry, another Golden State Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
I like him.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's about the end of the list.
He's serviceable.
For power forward. Now it gets tasty into the centers. Because when I looked at the list for this year and next year for 2014, the 2014 list for centers is terrible.
So everybody's getting paid this year.
It's getting this year. So you have to decide.
Great.
Gortat is the only name in 2014 that makes sense.
Gortat's going to get 4 for $65.
He is the only name. So now you're looking.
Book it.
This is
you heard it here first, folks.
This is the list. I'm just going to list them, and then we'll go from there. Chris Kaman, Dwight Howard, Samuel Dalembert, Pekovic, Jefferson, Bynum. That's it. That's the list for centers. Someone's going to get paid.
Kaman's slow. Dalembert's old. Bynum's broken. That leaves you with Howard, who's not going anywhere, and Pekovic.
And Jefferson.
And Jefferson, who doesn't play defense.
Right. That's it.
I'll tell you this. I wouldn't be opposed to Al Jefferson if it weren't for what we just saw happen this year.
The thing is,
Al Jefferson's better than Chris Kaman.
He is.
But Dirk needs a defensive center, man. He just does. And this is about Dirk.
It is. He needs a rebounding center too, which Kaman was not by any stretch.
Jefferson can rebound.
The thing
all you gotta do is go back to the first five episodes of MOR and we talk about the Mavs' pursuit of Jefferson in the summer 2010 and what we thought then. It still pretty much holds, which is that
but they're older.
They're both older. I like what he does on the offensive end. I'm afraid of the fit.
Mm-hmm. So that only really leaves the pipe dream of Dwight Howard
not happening,
or throwing money at Pekovich,
which is not the worst thing in the world you could do.
I think it has to be at least 11 to 12 per. It has to be.
And you know what though? If you do that, your Tyson Chandler decision is so dumb,
right?
You know,
at that point, that's what it comes down to.
So if they do that, I don't necessarily think it'd be bad for the team. I think Pekovic has a chance to be a pretty solid player.
He's 27. He's only 27.
Yeah. So to me, he would fix a lot of problems that this team has. But all those other guys we mentioned on all those other positions, it's like you have to pick. You can't have a new guy at every spot.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so much money to go around. And center is the pivotal one here because of what it means defensively, center and point guard. So I got real excited about names at the two guard spot and small forward spot, and we need a point guard and a center. And I didn't like any of the point guard names, and I do like Pekovic. So, what are we gonna do?
You'd have to offer him 4 for 48. 4 for 48. Would you sign off on that?
Well, what's my alternative? I got to trade for somebody.
You have to, yeah. Your alternative is trying to find a way to steal Gortat from Phoenix.
Surely there's a way to do that.
There has to be a way, because it's...
They don't want him. Phoenix is such shambles. They need to just fire sale everybody and suck for a couple years. There's nothing there to work with. And they just replace their coach.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing. It's just...
And they're getting a new GM.
It's a heap of smoldering ashes of dung. It's nothing. So...
It's whatever Steve Nash hair is still
left.
But
I do like Pekovic. And if... I'll tell you this. I do trust the Mavs brain trust ability to look at a situation and know what the best play at any given time is, as far as is this player worth this or not. And
you clearly have to overpay to get him.
If they decide that it's in their best interest to overpay him to get him, then I can get behind it, but I'd rather it not happen because I want to fill more than two holes. I need to fill the point guard hole. I need to fill the defensive center hole, and then that I need to fill the two guard hole, which has been empty forever. So
since Michael Finley left,
yeah,
I think if you're going to commit $12 million, it's either going to be on Pekovic or Bynum, and there's no Bynum is the ultimate risk.
I was about to say, is that not the biggest risk
he
reward?
He is the You're ultimate
just rolling
risk.
The dice.
There's people that will do that risk.
But is it worth it though with Dirk in the situation he's in now?
I can't. That's too big of a risk.
Or did we see too much of good things from Dirk over the last month and a half, 2 months, to where you don't want to roll those dice because Dirk's got a few more miles on him than maybe what you were afraid was the case 6 months ago?
If I'm going to take a gamble, I'm going to take a gamble on a 27-year-old center who's a bruiser.
Oh, yeah.
Who's a Chris Kaman better version in Nikola Pekovic. I'm not going to take the gamble on
things Kaman's never been able to do.
Right.
As far as defensively and rebounding.
But I'm not going to take a gamble $12 million with a guy with two busted up knees who's a questionable guy in terms of character and motivation.
Always been questionable.
I'm not going to take the chance on Andrew Bynum.
How about this? If the Lakers let a guy go,
that's a red flag.
Take that and run with it.
And do you want to do the dance again with another former Laker?
I don't.
So, okay. If you throw, let's just say you throw the 12, another angle to look at with Minnesota and Pekovic, if they commit to Pekovic, that means they've got to get rid of Kevin Love. There's no way that they can sustain keeping Pekovic and extending Rubio. So that means they're marrying Rubio with either Kevin Love or Pekovic this summer.
Yeah, and then that's it. Everything else is that's going to be the you know, vast majority of their cap.
Yeah.
For the foreseeable future.
Because they still have to field a team.
Dude, I'd take Kevin Love. I'm sorry.
I would too.
There's only one Kevin Love. So Pekovic is changing teams this year. I think let's pretty much book that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. It's going to be real interesting.
So if you put $12 million on Pekovic, that leaves you with roughly six to work with.
And you still got to get a point guard.
Mm-hmm. You could get Jarrett Jack, definitely Chauncey Billups. You're pushing it on Jose Calderon with $6 million. You're pushing it.
Say you go Pekovic.
You have
Jarrett Jack.
something.
What's J.R. Smith going to cost? Because I need somebody who can score.
He's making two-ish right now, and he's a player option. And you know he's going to, as the sixth man of the year, he's going to pass that option.
He's going to go and get mid-level.
Yes. He could easily get the mid-level.
Yeah. He will. Prediction. I don't know, man. This damn point guard hole, it haunts me. That's why we got to find another way. Mm-hmm. There's got to be another way. There's trades. Trades will happen.
So the intriguing names to keep track of for trades are obviously I don't know why Tim McMahon is pushing, let's see what happens with Rajon Rondo. But I don't see why Boston would give him up.
No.
He's petulant, but still.
I would take him in a heartbeat.
Because he's still going to miss some time. He's still going to miss some time with his ACL. Yep. But he's clearly, outside of Chris Paul, I like him as a point guard. If he was available via trade at the deadline, he's going to be available now. Paul Pierce. That's another name to keep in mind. Another name, Danny Granger. Busted up knees, but he's still... An interesting name that Landry brought up was J.J. Barea. If they're kind of committed to Rubio and they've already got Luke Ridnour on board and Alexei Shved, they're loaded up on point guards. So Barea could become available again.
Yeah, but he really can't be your starter.
Limited.
Yeah.
Limited. And then the other two names are Biggs, Gortat, and Cousins, Boogie Cousins. Those are your trade targets.
When I look at how much frustration Dirk had this year with the knuckleheadedness on his team, I don't know if I would want to foist DeMarcus Cousins upon him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Gortat's got to be in play.
I think he's got
the Mavs and Phoenix have a history of making trades.
Phoenix is stupid.
Phoenix is in a very bad spot right now. They really need to divest of everything.
I think at that point, I think we've talked about this before, but if you're gonna take Gortat, you probably have to take Beasley. They have to dump something along the way.
And what's his situation?
I think he's six for two more. This one and one more. I think. And I think the last one's unguaranteed, too. But they just need to unload. They don't have very many bad deals. They just have bad players.
Yeah.
Oh, another name is Jared Dudley in Phoenix. He's kind of an underrated guy, but he can do numbers across the board. He's kind of a jack-of-all-trades specialist at none. So that's kind of another name to keep in mind, too. He is a shooting guard.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd be okay. He'd be okay. He probably will. Again, all these guys, though, all the guys you want, you probably can't afford. It's kind of like car shopping.
Yeah.
So.
So that's what it's come down to. I think that's that's the beginning and end list right there. That's going to cover pretty much all the names you want to cover, basically, for free agency and taking a gander at the out-of-thin-air trade names you could come up with.
Man.
And we've come to the conclusion that it's going to be tough.
I think we have come to the conclusion that there are more holes to fill than there are dollars in the salary cap wallet,
mm-hmm.
if you will. So, yeah. It's going to be interesting. There's going to have to be some sleight of hand. But you know what? The Mavericks have always found a way, I think, to exceed or to overachieve in off seasons, one way or another. Sometimes it pans out, sometimes it doesn't. So I suspect they'll find their ways, methods of getting things done again. We'll do it. We'll see. Maybe the pieces will fit better. Maybe they won't. Everybody knows if we can get a full year of healthy Dirk, it's going to change everything. So.
Yes. It clearly makes up for six games-ish. At least. So we're going to take a break. We're going to go to Nuggets, which is basically the playoff edition of the Nuggets. Take a quick gander around the NBA playoffs, which is weird when the Dallas Mavericks are not involved in the playoffs.
I find myself caring less. Shocker.
Yo! The party's across the street featuring the greatest band in the world! More day to time!
Guitar. Welcome back, Mavericks Outsider Report, episode
74.
74 is in full swing. About ready to wrap things up, but before we go, it's important to do a little something we like to call NBA Nuggets. We like to take a look around the NBA, Brian, and see what's making news. And look at it through our Mav-colored glasses, which are especially Mav-colored right now because basketball is happening and the Mavs are not playing playoffs Mavless for the first time since the year 2000.
In the year 2000.
What were you doing year 2000 when the Mavs failed to make the playoffs?
Getting ready to graduate from high school.
Impressive. I was 20 years old, sophomore in college, and I was, I guess, pulling for the Pacers. Finals that year.
Was this the time you met that guy with the books? The Adol guy?
Nope. That was 94. Oh. That was in high school. Yeah. No, couldn't find my books at all.
I like that guy.
He's cool. Yeah. Probably is like so baked out of his mind right now. That's been 20 years almost.
He's at Google. I'm pretty sure he's at Google. So we're going to go ahead and sweep through the playoffs right now and sprinkle in some actual news that has popped up in the last couple of days. Miami and Milwaukee. Currently, Miami is housing, again, the Bucks. They're up, I believe, by around 13 or 14 points in the fourth quarter.
I couldn't find my books at all.
Love that guy. Love him. Miami's well on their way to a 2-0 series lead against the Milwaukee Bucks, the same Milwaukee Bucks.
They're going to roll, dude.
That have Brandon Jennings and said that they'll beat the Heat in six.
They're going to roll. I mean, it's almost not even worth watching the Eastern Conference. The depth up from top to bottom. First nugget. The depth top to bottom isn't there, and it's just not interesting. Nobody can hang with Miami, man.
No, not in the East for sure. I think it's going to go five if they get bored. If they get bored in Milwaukee,
yeah, that's a good point.
So, but either way, they're going to house the Bucks. Next nugget.
Oh, sorry.
It's halftime in Boston, I believe, or in New York, where Boston holds a 6-point lead over the New York Knicks, and they're hoping to get a split in New York. I thought this would be an interesting series in the fact that Boston's got probably one more run in them. They're old and wily and angry.
I kind of don't mind rooting for them, even though I do deplore sometimes KG's studio gangsterness. I don't mind. I've never had a problem rooting for the Celtics. It goes back to, you know, they were good when we were kids.
Yeah, Rick Carlisle was on that team.
Rick Carlisle was on that team, and he's my hero. So that's cool. But also, you know, that Knick team is Mavs Jr., so I kind of like those guys too. But I'm so unengaged right now, man. I might tune in for the conference finals. I've not cared less about NBA playoffs. Maybe in my ability to remember my life.
Because you're getting up for that NFL draft.
I'm bitter. No, damn sure don't. I like the Cowboys. I like football, but the Cowboys are so poorly mismanaged. I don't want to come across as someone who doesn't like the sport. But the Cowboys are so poorly mismanaged, Brian, that I just have to divorce myself from it. I'll follow it. I'll watch it. I'm in Vegas at that time. Maybe there'll be some fun prop bets for the draft. Like, you know, I don't know. Will Jerry pick a wide receiver? If there's somebody from Arkansas, I'll put all the money on picking that guy. You know, things like that. But they're so poorly mismanaged. I just have to divorce myself emotionally from it. It's terrible.
Next nugget. In the series, no one cares about Atlanta and Indiana, except for you, Rylan. You care about Indiana.
Yeah, but they're so hurt.
Yeah. Indiana is up 1-0 on Atlanta in the series, and Paul George won Most Improved Player in the NBA this year. So good for him. He definitely killed the Mavericks.
God, that was awful.
Earlier this year. Yeah, that's the series that only Rylan Rowe cares about, Indiana and Atlanta. Josh Smith is probably one series away from getting ridiculously paid as a free agent.
I'm a Lakers fan. Go Kobe. Black Mamba.
Yeah, clearly I care about the Lakers.
Yes. Next nugget. Brooklyn, Chicago. Chicago gutted out a win last night in Brooklyn where Joakim Noah was a beast.
I'm pulling for Chicago. I feel bad for him because Noah's been hurt. Rose, obviously, is a tragic, tragic, tragic situation, in my opinion. So, I'm pulling
What's
for
up
him.
With Derrick Rose? He just doesn't... It just seems like he's waiting for whenever to show up.
He's hurt bad.
He better be hurting bad.
Like
at this
it's
point.
Not coming back. Like this is a bad deal. Like it has to be.
It has to be because you've got Joakim Noah basically playing until his foot comes off.
Yeah,
and you've got Derrick Rose in a suit clapping. So, do you think Chicago can squeak that series out? I don't think they can.
No, probably not.
Not enough.
They're just so undermanned, man.
Another guy I like who I wish they could find a way, the Mavericks could find a way to get, Kirk Heinrich. He can drive that bus.
Yep. That guy would be okay with me. I've always kind of liked him. Good bus driver.
Yes. Next nugget. We go west now.
And not afraid to play defense.
No, definitely not. You can't be afraid to play defense with Tom Thibodeau and his need for a throat lozenge. going west now. David Lee hurt his hip, and he's out for the rest of the playoffs for Golden State. That game proved to be down to the wire in game one, where old man Andre Miller found a way to get to the rim.
And everybody's tweeting about how old Andre is.
Yes. And he was still able to drop 52 on the Mavericks at the drop of a hat.
Yep, whenever he wants.
So Denver looks poised to get out of the first round, especially now with Lee.
That'll happen, yeah. That won't be a problem, I don't think.
Do you see them being a threat?
No, and it goes back to what we talked about when we mentioned their winning streak. When you get down to playoff basketball and defense is locked down and you play the same team several times in a row and you know everybody's schemes and you're calling out the other team's plays and defense is so paramount, you got to have that guy to throw the ball down into to do work, and they don't have that guy. They don't have that best player, you know? So.
Sucks for you, Denver. You made a great one run, though. Next nugget. The battle of the beard. James Harden and the Houston Rockets taking on the Oklahoma City Thunder, where Oklahoma City basically housed.
Oh, yeah. Houston's lucky they got in. I'm sure they just feel good with that. OKC's going to roll. This is all about OKC, and is OKC going to be the team to come out of the West? Or is it going to be the Clippers, you know? Or is it going to be the Spurts? That's what it's all about.
Do you think that's a sweep? Or can Houston muster up enough offense?
Surely there's one game where Westbrook's and Harden goes off. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not. I'm going to say maybe not. I'm going to say maybe can't. Maybe possibly, maybe not.
So you rode the fence.
I'm going to be so decisive right now and say maybe possibly not.
Next nugget. Spurs and Lakers. The series where mostly everyone wants both teams to lose. Find a way to make both teams lose, but it doesn't seem possible.
Nope, I'm totally in for both teams losing.
Kobe Bryant made a lot of news for tweeting
during the game,
and now he's retracted and said he's going to step off the Twitter.
Well, that was it. I mean, I wish he would have kept doing it. That's fun. Everybody got all butt hurt. Hey, you should be a cheering on your team. What is this, middle school? He's Kobe Bryant. He has 5 rings. Get off his nuts. I don't even like the guy that much, but I respect the hell out of him as a basketball player, and I would love to hear his in-game insights. God forbid we actually have some decent in-game analysis. Oh, no, let's throw it to some dumbass, washed-up former player doing color commentary and get all butthurt and pee all over Kobe's head for tweeting during the game. What do they want him to do? Wave a towel? Are these are a bunch of butthurt Mateen Cleaves fans who think he should be waving a towel.
Mateen Cleaves, what a name drop right there.
Because he's the king of the towel wavers.
Way back machine on Mateen Cleaves.
It really doesn't matter at this point.
Is that what you say at the unemployed line right now, Avery?
Yeah, definitely.
Next nugget. Probably
that
was
a good one.
Probably the most interesting series in the first round is Memphis and the Clippers.
Yeah, definitely interesting. I'm pulling for Memphis, man.
They should have had that one last night. They should have.
Did Chris Paul foul, yes or no, on that final drive when
no.
he was pushing off?
Blake
I don't think
Griffin,
so either.
Blake Griffin fouled. He fouled to clear out some space.
But that shit always happens at the end of games. Mark watched it from the first angle and was like, dude, come look at this. Chris Paul definitely pushed off.
Mm-hmm.
And then we saw it from the angle behind Chris Paul. Mm-hmm. Which there would have been an official back there. And, I mean, I didn't think it was a foul. He never extended his elbow, his arm past the elbow. The contact that he made was, I mean, you could tell what he was trying to do, but, You know, he didn't move the defender off his spot.
It wasn't like Blake Griffin on Dirk where
defender off his spot. He created space and created contact at the same time, but didn't dislodge the defender. Maybe at another point in the game or another circumstance that gets called.
We're on the road.
I am perfectly happy with that not being called a foul.
That's going to be a fun series because Memphis is one of the few teams in the West that will openly want to play defense. And they just have not found a way to get that defense locked in for enough time.
Crazy Tony Allen, get it done.
And then Zach Randolph is now a shell of his former self.
Yeah.
It's sad to see. But then Marc Gasol is the best Gasol in the face of the basketball world.
Of all Gasols.
Next nugget. Larry Brown. No, Mike Brown. I got my Browns mixed
up. Don't make me ever have to get out the belt.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Mike Brown,
back to the Cavs.
Going back to the Cavs.
Talk about an unimaginative hire. SportsCenter, my SportsCenter app on my phone.
Did you want to throw your phone when you saw that?
Did you see the alert too?
No, I did not see the alert.
It does. It sends alerts, and I haven't taken the time to tweak what it alerts me on. So it'll alert me on stupid stuff sometimes, like NASCAR or like a bike race or something. But it sent me an alert that said Cleveland Cavaliers hire former coach Mike Brown. Blah blah blah. Brown led the Cavaliers to six straight playoff appearances between 2005 and 2010. Oh my God. Are you kidding me? No. LeBron James led the Cavaliers to six straight playoff appearances. Let's not pretend like this guy is some great coach. He's probably a good coach for where they're at right now. I mean, I don't know. He was an assistant in San Antonio. He can't be all bad.
Fell off the Popovich tree.
But, you know, yeah, but it obviously didn't work for him in L.A., but it just seems like a cheap hire to me. Like, they couldn't come up with any other ideas. But he got, what, four years for $20 million?
I think it was five.
Five for $20 million? That's a lot of money to be paying a guy who just got ran out of town in L.A.
And you're still getting paid from L.A. at that point, so it's not a bad gig.
Yep.
Next nugget.
Actually, this will keep him from getting the money from L.A.
Yes, but he got paid while he could.
Absolutely.
Excuse me. Mike Dunlap of the Charlotte Bobcats has been let go after 1 year. He got a 1 year rope in Charlotte.
Next nugget.
We already talked about awards. J.R. Smith, Sixth Man of the Year. Paul George.
Good for him.
Most Improved Player. And Marc Gasol, Defensive Player of the Year.
We are big fans of Marc Gasol in this house. We like him.
I'm not in your house all the time, but I like Marc Gasol too.
Well, you're welcome here because you like him.
Until you move.
Then you're welcome in the next place.
Oh, sweet.
TJBC V2.
That's it for Nuggets.
Okay. All right. Rock and roll.
Oh, no. We're not done with Nuggets. Lamar Odom.
Oh, yeah.
My bad.
That's actually just kind of a story.
Let's go. Do you have story time music ready for this?
Oh, let's see, Brian. Okay. What would be a good story time music?
Because I don't know what the theme of the story is going to be. Rylan was one of the Rylan and former third wheel on the show, Tim Koger, who's expecting a child, like Dirk is. They both were in the building at the American Airlines Center where basketball was played between the Dallas Mavericks and the Los Angeles Clippers, and this was the first time that Lamar Odom was in the Lamar Odom was in the building. Since he departed from the Mavericks last season. So you kind of figured that the crowd was going to be hostile.
That was a great experience. So here's how that all went down. I had tickets to the game on my plan, which are cheap seats, section 316 or 3. Yeah, so section
with
316.
With the Laker fans.
Hanging with all the Laker front runners upstairs. And Courtney couldn't go, so I asked him if he wanted to go. And then the day of the game, his dad had some seats to offer him. That were 10th, 12th row behind the basket. And so we're like, sweet, we'll be kind of close. That'll be fun. And so we did that. And then when we got there, his dad texted him, and his dad had gotten some other tickets through some other guy that were second row, like kind of right behind Don Knobler.
Mm-hmm. Who's Don Knobler?
Don Knobler is Mavericks super fan who sits on the sideline every game. Dresses crazy, super awesome guy, loves the Mavs. Loves hand clappers and is basically a local folk hero around here. So at halftime, Tim's dad offered to switch tickets with us, so we got to go down. Now, the cool thing is those tickets came with the VIP pass, which enables you to go into the Johnny Walker lounge room whatever thing, which I didn't even know existed. It's across, it's down on the lower level of the arena, the event level of the arena, across the hallway from the media dining room, and they have just buffet and free drinks and free liquor. It's Johnny Walker.
Right.
Which I didn't have any scotch, but because I was already drinking beer. But we went down there at halftime, and we were like, this is where we need to be. This is where people like us are meant to be. And I need to make sure everyone understands that. I need to be there, Brian. I need to be there every night. That's where my people should be.
Even so anyway, for Stars games, you want to be at the Johnny Walker Lounge.
No, but I want those seats. So we go down, and it was cool because in the second half, things got real chippy. The game got close. It was a very hotly contested game. The Mavericks did a great job of containing Chris Paul in the fourth quarter. Got into overtime. Some, you know, the crazy play with Dirk and Blake Griffin at the end of regulation, all that stuff.
Oh, that was on your side, too.
Yeah, it was right in front of us.
Yeah.
And Lamar Odom had a terrible terrible play. I don't remember what he did. I think he pretended to get tripped or something, and a foul was called, and it was a pretty poor call. And so I just stood up and let him have it, and I told him he was sorry and everything else, and all the people around me were like, yeah, go on and get it. Yeah. Tim was like, I like what you're bringing right now. That was his exact quote. So it was a cool experience. If you have an opportunity to luck into passes that are VIP, which enable you to free food and drink at the Johnny Walker, forgot what it's even called.
I think it's a lounge.
Johnny Walker Lounge. It's just a room. It's not anything pretentious or anything.
It's a big room.
But it's a big room that holds people, and it's got tables and chairs and TVs and
tablecloths,
beer and liquor and food and desserts.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So, by all means, Mavs fans, get down there. I don't know how, but get down there.
Find a way.
Yes, find a way.
So, yes.
That's all I got.
That was Lamar Odom.
That's all I got. Lamb. I got to give Lamb what he deserved. And that felt good.
And you noticed how going forward now, they showed a screen of him on the Jumbotron when they want him to boo.
It was the best coordinated boo ever. I mean, the minute, the second, the millisecond, his fingertips touch the ball, just cascading boos, just wall of boo. And then as soon as he passes the ball off,
no more wall
silence.
Of boo.
It was great.
It was crazy.
It was great. He's so hated. And that's because people need to understand, Brian.
Help me understand.
Fans care about effort. Mm-hmm. Fans care about the players caring. Because when you pay your money for a ticket and go to the game for your entertainment, yes, you're there for entertainment and fun, and Cash Saroy puts on a funny video and all these things. They're all part of the equation. But at the end of the day, you're there because of competition, and you like the sport, and you want the players to care about your team as much as you do.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't always do that, but most of the time, that kind of stays under the radar, and you love the guys that you love. But when somebody comes along like a Lamar Odom, there's absolutely no worse sin to a fan than Lamar Odom doing what Lamar Odom did. And so even though ultimately he left the team last year and that was a chapter that came and went, he will forever be just like a marked man in this town because of that. Because people don't forget that. That's just, you're taking a crap on the fan when you do that.
Gross.
That's nasty.
That is nasty.
Yeah, don't do that. It's not very sanitary.
I hope that you wore gloves. So if it was, okay, let me, I think I've asked this question, but I'm going to change it again. Let's say Josh Hamilton was only here for last year. If he did what he did last year compared to what Lamar Odom did in his year, which would be worse? Because he showed you that he can be a talent.
He gave you a big dose of not caring. Baseball is so much different, though. In baseball, you can do what Josh Hamilton did last year in baseball and still have a lot of people believing that you were trying. Because
even with that
there are guys that can go up to the plate and get into such a funk that's what happens. Now, his was extended and his was obvious, and the statistics bear it out in terms of he swung at more first pitches than anyone else, and you know he had more, you know, I forget what all they were now. Lone Star Ball, at Lone Star Ball, who I often don't agree with on Twitter, about a month ago threw a bunch of them out there.
Is that one person?
It's one guy,
oh, wow.
Adam J. Morris.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, all the statistics.
Friend of the show, Adam J. Morris.
No, not where he's not a friend of the show.
Oh, okay.
No.
Did I say Adam? Is that his name?
That's his name.
Oh, okay. I'm terrible with names.
But the stats were so damning in terms of what Hamilton had done. But a lot of people still go, well, he hit 295 and had 40 home runs, which is all true. But the quit was what mattered. But it wasn't so like he still did some good things. Like he still was somewhat productive. Lamar Odom was the biggest individual failure to do anything positive for a team, maybe in the history of this town, because of the circumstances and the name and the expectations and everything falling so short and being so terrible. And it just there's nothing like it. There won't be anything like it again probably for a really long time.
I can't find a comparison. There's nothing at all.
I can't. I mean, maybe somebody who's been around longer than us could, but we're a couple young whippersnappers in our early 30s.
Maybe that's something we can come up with on the Judgment Day episode. Is there anybody
that was less productive for their team than Lamar Odom was with similar expectations? Because you can
that's
go
quite
in,
the qualifier.
Because you can say, well, you know, Kenny Satterfield was less productive for the Mavericks. Well, hell, it's because he didn't play,
right?
You know, but in terms of people with reasonable expectations, has anybody ever laid a bigger egg?
No.
Maybe Chan Ho Park. But he tried. He just sucked.
His name was Chan Ho
Park.
But
even though he tried and sucked, I mean, Odom was so bad they had to tell him to go home. We will pay you to go home.
And he left the team for a little bit, too.
Yeah, you have to leave, come back, and then be paid to leave again.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard to top. That's very hard to top.
We're going to have to pose that to our brain trust think tank speculators,
yes,
spectators. We need it.
To the council.
Yeah, that's a good...
The Jedi Council.
The Mavs Jedi Council.
Or the... what's the word when like you go before a committee? Oh, hell.
I don't do that.
I'm so tired, I can't think, man. I don't know.
I think the Mavs Jedi Council
I got
works.
Up early because I went to Dunkin' Donuts and got donuts for the office because I'm a nice man, a generous person.
How early is early?
I left here like 7:15.
Yikes.
But I was up late listening to the Rangers.
You fell asleep, too, to the Rangers.
I fell asleep to the Rangers, woke back up, heard the post, and then went back to sleep.
Saw that tweet.
I tweet. Tweet me.
Where can we find you on the Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter under my name, Rylan, R-H-Y-L-A-N underscore Rowe. Or no, there's no underscore anymore.
Oh,
that's like a year. That's like
that's old.
Rylan Rowe, one word, R-O-W-E. Tweet me. We're good.
Find me at Ballin' with Brian. I'll probably be a lot quieter now. Because there's no more Mavs basketball to talk about. I'm going to find random stuff to talk about. I'm going to talk about snacks. I'm going to talk about wrestling.
Definitely tweet snacks.
I will talk about snacks as well.
Isn't that the guy that either does or did a Mavericks blog?
Maybe, if you play your cards right. I'll find stuff to talk about, and then everyone will leave. And then everyone will come back when the Mavs come back.
Yeah, so, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a quiet season for Mavericks Outsider Report. We appreciate everybody riding with us again for another season. This is our third year.
Wow.
Man.
74 episodes.
Dang. That's crazy.
Dang song.
So be sure and tell all your friends about us, your Mav-loving friends. You can find us on iTunes. Search for Mavericks Outsider Report. You can Google Mavericks Outsider Report, and they'll take you to Podomatic, where you can play some of our episodes as well over there. They host us. You can go to Ustream, search for us there. We record our video when I remember to hit record. I forgot like the first 2 minutes tonight.
Rylan.
Happens every time. So, you know, there's that. And we appreciate any and all feedback you give us on Twitter. We love interacting with people who listen and love sports and love Mavs and love, you know, snacks and wrestling, in Brian's case, as much as we do. So by all means, tweet us, holler at us. We will be coming back, as Brian said, sometime around draft/free agency time. In between then, the Ted Jones Broadcast Center will be relocated, and you'll have a brand new video view for the streamers. And hopefully it'll be, you know, just as awesome as it always has been here. What else? Yeah, so tell everybody you know about the upcoming episode.
Get ready.
We're going to be hyping it on Twitter.
Yes.
Because like Brian said, we're going to be pulling in the brain trust. We're going to be trying to get some opinions from some of our favorite Mavs basketball brains. We're going to be talking to play-by-play boys of the Mavs, Mark Folliwell, if he's available. We're going to be talking to Jeff Skin Wade of the Ben and Skin Show.
On whatever network.
Soon to dominate terrestrial radio.
He's already committed. He is the first guy to plant his flag and say, I'm in.
He planted his flag and scaled the mountaintop.
And I'm in.
Or whatever Coop said.
scale the playoff. That's 2 years ago.
Did it is. That's all I
know. Did it is.
Did it is.
He's the first guy to commit. He is our first verbal commitment to the Good. Jedi Mind Mavs Council.
And, you know, we got a lot of other super awesome people that just are like won't stop texting us to be on this show. And some of them may show up. We'll see.
Who Ben knows? With his bad left hand, right hand.
You
left
know,
hand.
I
can't remember which hand.
Left right hand.
Right hand.
I had a friend have a wrist broken in ninth grade or so, and he would use it as his offhand. It was his left hand. He would use it as his offhand playing basketball and just clear people out with that cast. He'd go up for a layup and just clear. If you had your hand up there, you were getting like smacked with a cast. It was terrible. So
that's a wrestling move,
so that's
too.
Definitely something that if you do break your hand or wrist or anything like that, you can use it on the basketball court if you're not afraid of risking further injury, which when you're 14 or 15 or whatever we were, my buddy Aaron didn't care.
He didn't have Cobra back then?
No Cobra.
Oh.
No Cobra problems.
Bless his heart.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's going to be it until probably the last week of June. Mavericks Outsider Report is going to go silent for a little while, but we will be back in spirit in late June, and we will definitely know let you know the exact date, the exact time, the exact location, because it's going to be on location, because it's a big deal. We've got to get the Mavs Jedi Council all in the same place at the same time, and that'll be somewhere fancy. I'm sure burgers and beer will be somewhat involved in this location of sorts.
Just remember.
What?
I don't have PA anymore.
That's fine.
So it might not. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
That's a call to Twitter.
Had to fire my PA.
That's a call to Twitter.
My PA provider.
That instance.
Yeah, that was awkward. So, yeah, rock and roll. Sorry, Mavs, 41-41, but at least it wasn't 40.
Hey, you didn't have a losing season.
Yeah.
So yeah, for Rylan. This is Brian.
For everyone who's been a part of this one, I'm Dale Hansen.
thank you to Tim. Thank you to Whataburger Spicy Ketchup.
Thank you to Whataburger Spicy Ketchup. Thank you to everybody that jumps on with us and contributes over the course of a season. We've name checked them already with Mark and with Skin. And who else have we had on this year? Did we have Stein on once this year?
No. We had Rob Mahoney.
With Rob Mahoney, we had Cash Saroy.
Cash Saroy, we got to bring him back next year.
He's good. We need to talk prime rib cooking techniques. Yes. Actually, the reverse.
We just need to thank everyone who's come on
the
board.
Reverse sear.
We've had Bob Sturm come on the show before.
Yep.
We've had Mark Stein come on before.
Yes, all those folks.
We had Daryl Armstrong come on the show before. I mean, he was one.
Hey, learn how to talk.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
We had Jay Crowder not call.
He was busy. he's busy figuring out how to avoid the rookie wall.
Yeah, understood.
So yeah, it's been another fun year. We're going to gear up in June. It's going to be a pivotal time for the Mavericks, and you know that
Judgment Day is coming.
It's coming.
Be ready.
The end is near. Rick says
be ready.
The guy in the sandwich board cutout is saying the end is near. And and you know the Mavericks Outsider board is going to have you covered with every single angle.
Yeah, and we may have our own sandwich boards. We may be selling them. We don't know. We'll see. Thanks again, everybody. We appreciate you very, very much.
Bye.
We'll see you.
There is a guy named Brian Gutierrez, but it's got to be a different guy.
I don't trust him. His name is Ryland.